Sam, do you specialize in African football?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I focus on, man.
Yo, you know, it's that deep here. Like, you might know more about my own country squad than me, bro.
Where you from?
Congo.
Phew.
Hey,
You man ain't going. You're not
if
going.
we're ever gonna have a slogan yet for this podcast, it's gonna be progression is not linear, and we're gonna say this every week.
All right, we back. We back. Hi, everyone, again. Welcome back to Ballers Corner. Today, I'm joined with Corel, F, Sandro, and myself. It's Tony. We also got a special guest with us tonight. His name is Sam. He's going to give us a bit more conversations about, a bit more insight, sorry, to the AFCON, which is starting on Sunday. And today, we wanted just to present to you guys a quick conversation about the tournament itself, the speculation towards the tournament, the criticism the tournament is getting, as well as a few footballers and teams to watch for this coming tournament. So where we just want to start, especially just tackle the criticism that's getting at the moment, and that's the AFCON itself and why is it played in the winter months. We've seen a lot of journalists talking at the moment on Twitter and on social media asking the AFCON should be, like, asking or even saying the AFCON should be played in the summer. And we just wanted to respond quickly and give you guys some sort of insight to why the AFCON plays in the winter months. Do any of you guys understand the reasoning to why the AFCON is playing in the winter months and not the summer months?
Of course, yeah. The temperature, man. But yeah, go on, Sam.
No, I was going to say, because a lot of the time, in a lot of African countries, it's rainfall season in the summertime. And yeah, it's not really ideal conditions to be playing football in. And you know, when it rains in Africa, it rains. It's not any London rain, it's like rainforest rain. So yeah, and to add to that, it becomes very humid. So I guess CAF just don't want to have to risk, you know, playing a tournament in the summer and then, you know, anything happening to the players. We had a great tournament in 2019 in Egypt. That went really well. Obviously, Egypt, it doesn't work. The weather conditions in Egypt don't work exactly the same as, you know, a West Africa country, for example. So that one went well. But I do think they plan to have it in the summer every year after this tournament coming.
Yeah. It's also tradition. It's also tradition, man. The first AFCON, I think, was 1957, a year after the inauguration, that CAF was going to make their own competition. And that was played in February. That was played in Sudan, wasn't it? Where I believe Egypt won the trophy there. And that was played in February. And since then, I believe every 2 years or whatever was decided at the very beginning, each AFCON was played in February. So it's kind of tradition as well as the temperature and the fact that it's not healthy for the footballers. We were all there in 2010 World Cup, where footballers were doing press conferences and they were saying they were generally struggling to breathe because especially the nighttime games for the Western European country. I remember an interview was being given by, I want to say, one of the Dutch players, I want to say someone like Nigel de Jong, and he was like, it is so hot that the intensity of the game just has to drop sometimes for some of the players. So you can imagine why, you know, there's people out there that wouldn't want it to be in the summer and prefer it to be in the winter. At the end of the day, tournaments can't happen without the footballers, and footballers' health is what matters the most. Sam made a good point about how they want to return it to the summer. I think that also comes with the reformat. And I think recently, since 2017, there was a reformat to increase the tournament size to 24 teams. I think that's to appeal to a bigger crowd and a bigger audience. So I personally prefer it to be winter, but I can see why they want to move it to the summer, especially now with all the backlash it's getting, with all the big clubs missing out on their players. But Sam, thanks for going into more detail about that. So now that we kind of understand why it's played in the summer, we can get into the better part of the show, and that's for us to introduce some players. We're calling it AFCON watch list. We've come up with two players and a club that we believe you guys will be worthy of your guys' attention. And the what we mean in terms of the club is we are putting our necks on the line and saying that this particular country is going to go the whole way and win it. I wanted to start with F. F, have you got two players for people to watch, and who is your club that you're back into in the AFCON?
I do have two players. Country, I've actually been that torn between so many because I really don't want to go with one of the obvious choices. I want to go, I always like going for a dark horse, but for players, I've got Ibrahim Sangare as my first player. Those who have listened to our previous podcast will know that I'm very big on midfielders. And he's a great profile. He's at PSV, started off at Toulouse, 6'3", rangy midfielder, very an agile ball winner, can really hurt teams on in the transition with his really, really powerful running. And in a tournament that looks like it will come down to maybe a lot of, there'll be a lot of teams that are playing on the counter in transitions. I think that he'd be a big player for the Ivory Coast. It looks like he will be playing next to Kessié, or maybe in a three with Jean-Michel Seri. So yeah, he's one midfielder that a few big clubs have been eyeing as well. I do know Arsenal were linked with him before they signed Partey as well, and a few seasons before as well, before he moved to PSV. But that's my first player. Second player, again, I wanted to go for Mohamed Kudus, but it looks like he may not play. But I think I've spoken about him before as well. A midfielder that can do a bit of everything, really. Very skillful, can dictate, can create, can defend. Very big on ball progression. But I'm going to go with Samuel Sekou of Hoffenheim. Hopefully he gets game time. I'm not quite sure on the Mali midfield setup, but they have a host of midfielders that could start. They have Traoré there. They also have Mohamed Kamara in Salzburg. Samuel Sekou is another one. He's at 25 right now. He's a bit more, maybe I'd say a bit more defensive than Sangare. And he looks to sit back and dictate the play, and you won't see him making the forward runs that Sangare does for Ivory Coast. But he is a player, again, another player who is itching into his prime years that some clubs will be looking at if he has a good tournament and continues to do well at Hoffenheim as well.
That's it. You mentioned briefly there about Sangare and what type of player that he is. What would make him stand out in a 90-minute match? What would people tuning in to watch him be expecting from Sangare?
Number one, notably, is ball winning. I think there's a random stat that I remember. At Toulouse, the season before he left, he had about 3.4 interceptions, average about 3.4 interceptions a game, which is insane. It's the amount of times he win the ball and what he would do with the ball after that, bringing the team up the pitch all the way. His range of passing is very good as well, very underrated pass of the ball. I didn't mention that. I think he will look to him and Kessié together can be a very, very dynamic pair. And that's what will be the thing that will make him stand out in 90 minutes is the amount of times he wins the ball, the amount of times he brings the ball forward, the constant energy and reading of the game to be able to keep his team in it, really.
It kind of suits Kessié's type of play as well, where Sangare would sit back and basically clean up everything in front of the defence whilst let Kessié run up and roam a little bit and try and create. So already that partnership there does seem a little bit mouth-watering. The other player as well, Diadi Samiseku. I want to say that slowly as well, Diadi Samiseku, because it can be quite of a mouthful. You mentioned he plays for Hoffenheim. What makes him different? You did say that he's a bit more defensive than Sangare, but could you go in more detail as well in terms of what makes him different to Sangare?
He's different to Sangare in that I think his game's based more on his passing ability as well. So one thing to watch out for will be his diagonals. He likes to play some floated balls, lofted balls in between the opposition fullback and centre-back. Hoffenheim's been trusted quite a bit, actually, to be that person to dictate the play as well. So that's something Sangare isn't really trusted with, even though he has the good passing technique. But his passing technique is more so used at the end of transitions where he's brought the team up all the way and then it's about picking out a pass for one of the attackers ahead of him. Samuseko will be probably the one sitting deepest for Mali. A very talented squad there. In terms of defence, maybe not too sure, but I'm sure that he'll be one of the shining lights in their team.
Who do you think, if you were a Premier League team, for example? I'd say Premier League because obviously we are from England, so a lot of people listening would be Premier League fans. if you were looking as a scout, where would you think Samaseku and Sangare, what teams would you think they'd be good for additions after the AFCON?
Oh, that's a good question. I think Arsenal would, could still do someone of Sangare's profile, only because I still think Partey is not a defensive midfielder. I stick by him being a central midfielder in eight, like he was at Atletico. We saw in the recent match against City as well how good he was in transition, bringing up the ball up. He can play there, but if he's got someone that's a bit more defensive behind him, which I think his best season in Atletico was with Rodri behind him. I think he can do real damage there. As for Samaseku, probably another mid-table team. Maybe if Everton wants to replace Allen, similar player. Yeah, I'd maybe say something like that. He presses, he presses quite well high up the pitch as well. If needed to, he hurries his opposition. Attacking midfielders and I think he could play in a team like that as well. But yeah, I think those two teams could do with them.
That's quite a good shout, if I'm honest. I think Everton actually might be a good shout there, because then he can anchor as well. He could probably anchor the midfield three. I'm not too sure what's happened to Andre Gomez this season, but I think their best midfield could be Andre Gomez. What's his name? Decore. There we go. Decore and Samaseku. That could be quite a strong midfield there. And what team are you backing to go all the way at the AFCON?
I honestly don't know. Morocco have, I think, that really nice team. I think Ziyech will be a miss, but still a strong team nevertheless. I want to really go for Senegal or Mali. Even Ivory Coast, I think, because I think I spoke about Ivory Coast when we were talking earlier before we started recording, and saying how they really have been unlucky in terms of getting to finals twice, losing on pens. Got to, I think, a third place playoff a few years back as well. I think they lost that as well. I'd like to see one of those two teams go far and maybe even win it as well. They've all got talented squads. All three of them got talented squads.
If you had your money now, you have to bet on one team. Who would it be?
I'm not a bet man, you know. But I'll go for. I'll go for Mali.
Mali. Okay, we'll lock that in. So F's bet is Mali. I don't know what the odds are for Mali, but I'd say they're quite outsiders. It would be great to see a team like that win it, though, because of the names they've got under there. So F's bet locked in is Mali. We're now going to go to our addition for tonight, and that's Sam. Sam comes from, I believe, a Twitter page called Jabulani. Is that right?
Yes, mate.
Sam, if you could just tell our listeners a little bit about Jabulani and what you guys do over there.
Yeah, so Jabulani XI is basically a platform that, you know, provides coverage on African footballers and footballers of African heritage. So as you know, AFCON's one of our biggest tournaments, so we're definitely going to be covering, you know, all the stats, records, covering all the games and everything that just basically goes on at the tournament. So yeah, just give us a follow. We're over on Twitter and we're on Instagram as well. So yeah, Jabulani XI.
Fantastic. We'll plug that in the description for below. After this goes out, guys, do give them a look, because we had a look in what the in-depth information you can get about footballers and clubs and national teams, about the not only just AFCON but African football, you know, year wide. So give them a follow, give them a look, and indulge yourself, ideally. Sam, we're just going to come to you as well. Similar setup to what we asked F. Who would be your two players to watch out for in this AFCON and why?
Cool. So I think. Out of my two players, I got one that maybe will not make everyone's list, and I got one player that might make everyone's list. The player that might make everyone's list is Sebastian Haller. Obviously, we've been seeing what he's been doing in the Champions League, scoring many goals. He's hitting numbers right now. I'm not too sure what he's been doing in league-wise, but when you're performing at the Champions League, you don't really need to do much league-wise. But he's still yet to make that impact at international level. Obviously, he only really started playing for them last year. So this is his first major tournament. I think, you know, with the help of Pepe, Zaha on the wings, crossing the ball into him, you know, getting in, well, those two getting into the tight spaces and just playing the ball along the floor for him to tap it in, or playing it over for him to head the ball in. I think he can walk away with a golden boot. I think he's got a strong chance to perform out there. Then my second player is Frank Onyeka for Brentford, Nigeria. reason why I picked him is because obviously Nigeria is going to be without a table. So it's time for him to step up. You know, every time he's been playing for Brentford, he's been, you know, he's been, you know, making an impact and using his minutes well. So I'm looking forward to see how he's going to perform, you know, and that partnership with him and Ndidi, I've been waiting to see it. And, you know, I think this tournament now is going to really show what type of player he is, because when you go into these type of games, especially Nigeria playing Egypt in their first game, there's a certain mentality you've got to walk into. You know, international football is not like league football where you might have another chance to get your points back. You lose one game in the group and it could be all over for you. You know, you kind of have to rely on other results. So I'm interested to see what type of mentality he's going to bring to the squad, because Brentford, let's be real, they're not really a club that you expect to win much. So he's going to have to change his mindset and hopefully learn from some of the experienced players there as well. So I'm looking forward to see what he can do.
Now, I love your suggestions, man. But just to start with Haller as well, we saw Haller come to the Premier League and not really get his plaudits, or really, he didn't really suit or fit West Ham and what was happening there. You know, the old British way, if you're a 6'4" lad, you should be a target. What's his style for Ivory Coast? How did they set up with him at a part of the attack? Do you know, Benny Charles?
Yeah, so I watched a couple of Ivory Coast World Cup qualifiers and I realised they were just playing the ball short, just allowing him to get into those spaces and tap the ball in from close range. Obviously, we can see that he can do more than that. He scores headers. I remember the bicycle kick he scored for West Ham in the Premier League a couple of seasons ago. So we know he can do a bit more, but I think for Ivory Coast to really get, I don't know, 6 goals, 7 goals out of him this tournament, they will be looking to just cross the ball in from close range and he just taps it in from the 6-yard box. Pretty much like what Igalo was doing for Nigeria 2019.
Yeah, and I'm excited myself, because Haller is somebody that, unfortunately, we've not had this platform for a while, but between us as friends, we've really rooted for, especially since his Frankfurt season. Mm-hmm. So we are excited to see how he demonstrates himself for Ivory Coast. And Onyeka as well, man, what a... Just that midfield double with Ndidi again, you mentioned it, is going to be very exciting to see. How does Onyeka differ potentially from Samuseku and Sangare in the Nigerian national team?
I think he's quite similar, but one thing I really like about him is his agility. That's one thing that really stood out for me as well. And the partnership with Ndidi, especially one thing I'm really excited about is the fact that those two are going to really protect Iwobi, because Iwobi tends to lose the ball a lot. So guys like Onyeka and Ndidi would definitely be able to just help him out in the midfield, win the ball back and stuff. But Onyeka, his speed, his agility is one thing that really stood out for me. And I feel like we've been missing that quite a lot in the Nigeria team. Especially our defence has been quite weak lately. So we're going to really rely on him to help us, you know, track back and win the ball back and just help out the defenders when needed.
Sounds good. Sam, you're Nigerian, right?
I'm Nigerian, man.
Do you back Nigeria all the way?
Listen, I always say, yeah, any team in the tournament can win it, innit? Obviously, from the get-go, I'm going to support my team. But if I'm going to pick a winner, it's got to be Senegal. I think Senegal were very unlucky in 2019, man. They got to the final, and the goal they conceded was just off a deflection, went over the goalkeeper, and it was just unlucky. But I feel like this year they found their missing piece, and that's Edouard Mendy. I know he's not been that great these past couple of months. He played well against Liverpool, but he's not been that great these past couple of months. But I think he's their missing piece. If he can find his form again, he's going to be the guy that's going to help them win that trophy this year.
if Koulibaly can find his form again, he's been a, he's been a bit. The thing with Koulibaly as well, I feel like he's just been a bit nonchalant with Napoli at the moment. I feel like
the
mood over there has switched a little bit, and he's just like, oh, I'm going to play at 60%.
If I'm honest, I feel like it's been like that for a couple of years. You know, there was a point where we were talking about Koulibaly coming Prem. He's one of the best in the world. I feel like the conversation's been dying down for a few years.
But the thing is, and he still shows glimpses that he's good. Like last season, he pocketed Lukaku in a way that. And you know, people say, oh, Lukaku is scoring big games. Lukaku did well in Serie A. And last year, Napoli knocked Inter out the Coppa Italia. The year before, he knocked Inter out the Coppa Italia. Juventus knocked him out last year. And Koulibaly dropped one of the best performances I've seen in ages. So it's still there. The way I see it now is if Edouard Mendy gets his form back, Koulibaly gets his form back, they're going to be, my God, they're going to be a difficult team to beat, especially with Mendy. Mane up front, Ismaila Sarr is now allowed to go. So, Senegal definitely.
Do you think there's still a big move in there for Koulibaly, or is it, do you mean the ship sailed?
How old is he?
He's 30. I believe he's 30 now. As a centre back, it's not too bad. You can still get a decent move. You can still get a decent move. It's just who's going to gamble? Who's going to pay that gamble? Because
strongly linked with City for so long, and it just never happened.
The thing about and Di Laurentiis is still going to charge a big fee because he's like the Daniel Levy of Italy. He's a very difficult man to deal with. So I'd like to see him get a big move because I think he deserves it. He's a top player, but I don't know if it's going to happen. Sam, thank you for that. Really enjoyed your pieces there. We're going to go to the complete opposite, and that's Sandro. Shay, Sandro, however you know him, right? Actually a Caribbean boy from the island. So his insight on the AFCON is going to be quite interesting. Shay, who are your two players that you're looking forward to watching the AFCON?
Cool. So my first two, first one, I'm going to go with Kamaldeen Sulemani from Rennes. He came up on my Twitter a few months ago, doing some madness in the French league, and I haven't like dived in too much about him, but I know that he's a very technical winger. He's very good on the ball. He knows how to beat a man. He's very good technically as well. Do you get what I'm saying? So, like, I'm excited to see what he brings to the AFCON because he's young. He's 19. He's not like a fully experienced player yet. So, for his first proper like major tournament with Ghana, it's going to be something that we might get to see. He might even be able to bust his like next move. Do you get what I'm saying? So I think this one will put him on the stage properly still, I can't lie. That's my first player. And my second, I was debating between a couple, innit? But and this might have Sly, obviously Arsenal bias and whatever else. Yeah, he might not even play like that, but I want to go for Omar Rekic. He's centre-back for Tunisia. Now, I don't know if he's going to play like that, but he's young, another player that's young. He's 18. He's not played first-team football for Arsenal, and he's already been called up for Tunisia. I think it's a big move for him. I think it's a big move from Tunisia as well, to trust him as well. It would be nice to see if he actually gets some minutes, because I feel like he'll surprise a lot of people with how good he actually is for his age. And hopefully for him as well, that could put him on a platform to if... He maybe not necessarily get into Arsenal first team, because I don't think that pathway is ready for him yet, but maybe get a loan move or get himself out there in a way where he's going to be playing consistent football. And you get me? I feel like this tournament, you might be able to see another young up-and-coming centre-back. Do you know what I'm saying?
I like that. It's different. He's gone the young route. This paid everybody here a huge... Kamaldeen Sulemani fans. I don't know if we've spoke about him in depth already, but we definitely will in time to come, especially F. That's one guy high up on F's list.
That's my guy. He's such a good player to watch. Yeah, he damaged PSG, man. Hakimi had a nightmare that game.
19-year-old trickster, full of confidence, unbeatable ability. It's just whether or not he now focuses and reaches his unbelievable potential, because he is going to the very top if things go right. So again,
I just want to play him, man. That's what I hope. I hope he gets minutes for Ghana.
Yeah, and he really should, because he's definitely going to be a devastating weapon for them. So the stage is for him to shine. I'm interested about Omar Rekic especially, because you mentioned something about like this is the trust that Tunisia have taken to bring him in. This ideally could become a breakout tournament for him. And you never know, this anything can happen. So he could go there and he could impress and may force himself into the Arsenal setup or get himself a move. For those that have never heard of him, could you give us a little bit more insight of who Omar Rekik is and what he can do?
So yeah, like I was saying, he's no nonsense centre back. He's very very agile, not really necessarily ball playing, but he's very more on the stopper more than a sweeper type centre back. He's not really a libero kind of player. He's more like anchor. I don't know. I'm just more excited to just see how he also progresses in the tournament, playing at a high level, and the fact that he's not played at a high level in terms of club football. Do you know what I'm saying?
He has a brother that plays.
Kareem Rekik.
Yeah, formerly of Man City. Where is he now at the moment? Is he at Sevilla?
I have no idea. Let me have a little look at you.
That's Sevilla. Yeah, he's at Sevilla. I remember him. I remember him at Hertha Berlin. I may be wrong, but I believe he played at Hertha Berlin for a year. Then he went to Marseille. So his brother's doing all right. If he's anything like his brother, surely he should be fired at this AFCON, because Kareem Rekik, anyway, is quite a capable defender.
Omar's actually been linked with, they haven't said any clubs from any of the reports I've seen, but Arsenal are looking to loan him out this month. So
the tournament
definitely could be a breakout one for him.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And how old is Omar Rekik?
Omar's 18.
18, yeah. So he's stage is his, really. 18 to, it's a great time for him to break out. If he does get some minutes, it'll be fantastic to see. I can just imagine an 18-year-old running the show. Gives me Delit vibes when Delit played in the Europa League final against Manchester United and actually held himself quite well at 17. So I hope to see he's something similar from Omar Rekik. Sorry, go on.
I would say, hopefully, because especially with the minutes thing, him being a young man, teams don't really put trust in them like that. So if Tunisia actually do put trust in him, it would be nice to see if he can really hold his own against big men playing international football. Do you get me?
Yeah.
Big tournament as well.
He plays under-23s as well. He doesn't even play for the under-19s. You know, he's playing with the under-23s. So he's already got that experience a little bit.
Yes, Sam, that must tell us that he's some sort of capable footballer. So again, thanks for that, because that's somebody that I wouldn't have thought of. So now that I do know of Omar Rekik, he will be definitely somebody I'll be keeping an eye on. Shay, what team do you back to go all the way in the AFCON?
Cool. My team, I was going through teams as well, and I was thinking there's a couple that could do it, little dark horses, like Morocco, Senegal. But I'm going to go for Ivory Coast.
Yeah.
I can't lie. I'm going to go for Ivory Coast because I think, like Sammy was saying, Sebastian Haller getting in their team now. I think Pepe, who hasn't played a lot of football this season, I feel like he's got a bit of a point to prove. Whether people really look into the AFCON and see that as he's proven a point. But I feel like he's actually got a point to prove. And I think him playing consistently, I think Ivory Coast have been close. They've been close to actually winning the tournament and getting in and around the finals and semi-finals or whatever else. But I think this year, they can really push on and pull through still, especially as well. Zaha's going as well and Jeremy Boga, they're both going as well. So I think,
They've got tricks on the wings. Pepe, Boga, Zaha. That must be exhausting for any fullback.
Haller isn't even regarded as necessarily a flat. Like you said, in England, they regard tall footballers as target men. Haller can play ball, bro. Can play ball. He's technically got it. Do you get me? So, I'm excited for Ivory Coast, though.
Look, Ivory Coast have the best attack in the tournament, would you say? All of you guys.
Across the front three, possibly.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Across the front three, possibly.
Who would be playing up top for Senegal?
Last time I checked, it was Niang, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think I'd go for Ivory Coast still. Ivory Coast, they forgot. That one there was the deciding factor for them.
They've actually always been blessed with good attackers, man. That's crazy.
Jay, thank you for that. So now we've got F's choice was
Mali.
Sam's choice was Senegal, and Shay's was Ivory Coast. We're gonna move on to Karel now. Karel, see your insights always valuable. So, who do you think will be two players to watch in this AFCON?
So my first is a little known player. Goes by the name of Riyad Mahrez. No, joking. I'm not going to do all that. Don't worry. I really thought about trolling everyone and doing that, but let me not do that. My first player is his international teammate, Youssef Attal, right back, Nice.
Good choice.
He's 5 years old. One of my favourite players in the world. Like, I've wanted him at my club ever since we've been looking at getting a right back / right wing back, because the way he carries the ball is just beautiful. Obviously, he's had a few injury issues, so he's not played as many games this season in Liga, but I'm sure he'll be primed and ready going into this tournament. I also noticed in recent games he hasn't played as much for Algeria, but I'm not sure if that's due to his lack of actual appearances at club level, but maybe that also comes into the fact that Algeria are like on one of the longest unbeaten streaks in football history. So, you know, you don't want to change a winning team. But hopefully, if he does get his start in the tournament, I expect him to just do what he's been doing for the last few years at Nice and at international level, which is terrorizing left backs and left wingers. Because you know when he's about, you have to double up. You have to track back. So if this comes see, you know, your boys, Senegal, Mane is going to be running this way. you play Ivory Coast, Pepe, you're running this way. You have to follow him. Otherwise, it's a problem. So that's my first player. My second player is someone that's been close to my heart since I was in school. But he's even the same age as me. So we're looking at each other. I look up to him, but we're looking at each other eye to eye. And that's Jeremy Boga. Obviously, we spoke about this off camera a little bit where I said The front line changes for Ivory Coast regularly, and we never really see the same lineup twice in a row. But I back him to come in and do his part, especially where he's more of a creative player than a goal scorer. I mean, he scored his first goal for Ivory Coast this year, but having someone like Haller to play off and also find in the box with, you know, easy cutbacks as he's a strong dribbler, I think could really work in their favour. And even if he is used a rotational piece for a Zaha or a Pepe coming off the bench or Gradle, I do believe he can bring an impact on both sides of it just because of his play style and how strong he is on the ball. Now, we just got to pray the pitches are good because I've picked two ball carriers. So if the pitch is doing bubbly, then these could be like the worst picks. But, you know, typically in AFCON, they tend to be okay. Should I go on to my team now?
No. I just want to pick up Attal.
Go on.
Attal's such a good suggestion. Why does Attal stand out to you? Because when you're saying, you know, he's going to drag the wingers back, but what type of player is he? And what will make, you know, newcomers, casuals that's going to watch AFCON, what makes him stand out?
Because you know what it is, yeah? Even though he's 25, I feel like he's a very much... Okay, unless you play FIFA, right, Ultimate Team. So I know he's a very popular player on that side of things, but them man don't really know football like that. They just know cards. But in the scope of world football, like, he's actually under the radar for how good he is. Like, when I see people, like, being linked with right-backs, right-wing-backs, like, his name doesn't come up. Man United signed Aaron Wan-Bissaka when this guy was around. It's telling you now people are not using their eyes when it comes to ballers. But obviously, his biggest strength is his dribbling in terms of going forward. But even if you watch clips of him, he's a link-up player as well. He knows he can do a little 1-2, get down the line, but he's very much a offensive-minded player. But don't get that twisted. He can defend too. He's, especially, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Sam, but like when I've watched AFCON, it seems to be a tournament that's played in transitions, isn't it? Like there's a lot of counter-attacks, a lot of up and down, and you need players that are going to run you out the gym. Same way as like when F's back in like Mali and teams with strong midfielders, because when you win the ball back, it's about getting the team forward. And when you lose the ball, getting the team back. And Attal is perfect for that. That's why, again, like I said, I've wanted him at my club for a long time, but it's not happening.
He'd be perfect for Chelsea as well because he is like a workhorse, isn't he? Like everyone says, you know, he's playing right back for Nice, but ideally, I tell himself he's generally a wing back, kind of the Hakimi mold. Isn't as quick as Hakimi, but is very much evolved as Hakimi, always up and down the field. So it's very interesting to see what he's going to be able to bring to the AFCON. And finally, hopefully this could be a tournament for him to get a breakout and people can actually recognize him other than, like you said, on FIFA. Your other player, Jeremy Boga. I don't know if you guys, you listeners, have actually noticed something, but we're very big dribbling enthusiasts.
Except from F. F loves midfielders.
If you, no, no, but even F as well, like the wingers that we all like to watch aren't necessarily the ones that get big goal and assists. So we don't really...
Yeah, no, I'm all about that. Can you dribble? Can you...
Yeah.
If you can finish your chance.
You know what it is though? Like, let's keep it real, yeah? Like... Assists are the fakest stat that has ever been invented in football. Like, what is an assist? I pass you the ball on the halfway line, you shoot, you score, assist. That doesn't make me
see Bruno Fernandes, yeah. That guy's made me like just wass off assist.
Hey, right. Listen, that's not the
guy. Sorry, the European player. Sorry, not today, I'll
digress. But what I wanted to make is for listeners, especially that have listened to our episodes, the last few episodes, we are very, if you were a dribbler, if you've got great agility, if you can just beat a man, and not just like knock it past him. I mean, consistently, we love that. And that's what Jeremy Boga is special at. You know, Carell said that he's someone that we've looked up to him. We've actually followed, everyone here has actually followed Jeremy Boga's career since Chelsea. And from some of the footballers that we've spoken to, and we've had the pleasure of speaking to from the special guests, all tell you the same thing. He is a problem. So especially now that he's just got his move, I think this is going to be a perfect time. Hopefully he usurps Zaha, because I prefer him to Zaha, and he starts and he shows people what he's about, because yeah, we're big Boga fans here.
Do you want to say, do you want to talk about his move to from Sassuolo?
Yeah, he's finally got a move. Well, he's in the process of getting a move. Not that Sassuolo is a bad club to play for. They're generally a good mid-table team. But I feel like Boga is definitely a player that what he can do in a pitch is overlooked, because, again, he's a footballer that doesn't have high goals and assists. It's nice that Atalanta have finally acknowledged that he's generally a good footballer and taking a punt on him, because I believe he's going to go there and hopefully explode. Only thing I'm worried about is the timing, unfortunately, because Atalanta's spark is dimming. Their golden period is drying out a little bit, with Ilicic losing an edge and Papi Gomez now leaving. I hope he actually goes there and revitalizes that and then becomes what Papi Gomez was.
Yeah, but you know what the difference is though? Like, he's at Atalanta, where the spark might be diminishing. The club is a name now. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whereas like Sassuolo, like, yeah, they had like, obviously, Berardi was balling there, Locatelli was balling there, but people didn't know this until they watched them for Italy, and they're like,
yeah,
"Oh, who are these guys? Oh, like, I've seen their name, but I don't know them. Now I can see their ballers." Yeah. So it's just about, for players like Boga as well, when you say like the numbers don't jump off the page, you need them to be somewhere where he's visible.
Yeah.
So even if their spark's diminishing, there's still people that are going to watch Atalanta and then go, "Oh, wait, no, he's a good player. We can take a punt on him at the next level after that."
No, and if they keep Malinovsky, sorry, and then have Boga inside left, Malinovsky inside right. Oh man,
hey, don't get Tony started on Serie A, man. Please,
hey. I'm not gonna get started. Let's just say we're happy for a fellow player.
Their records signing at 22 euro million. So that would be interesting to see if that affects him or not. If he goes on and just.
I'm sure he's got this, and I'm sure he's going to show Atalanta exactly the investment they've made at the AFCON. So that's another player that we've got for you to watch, especially from Carell. That's Jeremy Boga. Hopefully he plays on the left-hand side, because on the right-hand side he's a bit... So that's Boga for you. Carell, just to wrap up your segment, who's your team that's going all the way?
So as everyone on my Twitter probably would know, my country disgraced me again and didn't qualify for this tournament. But they promised me a World Cup appearance. They promised
me Balassi.
No, don't. Because you know what's
Balassi.
Listen.
I'm going to laugh.
Stop talking like this. Stop talking like this.
Listen, Balassi's blacklisted. Yannick, if you're ever listening.
Never comedy Congo. No, but what I'm saying is, yeah.
Yannick, if you're ever listening, I'm sorry, but no, you can't come back.
Sam is the only person in this call or in this podcast right now that could have backed his home nation and didn't back them. If Congo were there, we could run out with 11 TP Mazembe players, yeah, and I'm still picking them over any other country because I'm biased. Yeah.
No, but
listen, just be realistic.
If I can't do that, I can't pick them. You know, them man disgraced me, did their thing, right? Cool, you didn't want to qualify.
Nah,
so listen, I'm gonna be a bandwagon fan.
I'm sorry, but if, before you get into it, Kuro, if Congo actually qualified, the campaigning that I would do by myself to get the traitors back in there. And what I mean by traitors isn't the ones that I already declared for Belgium. I'm talking about the ones that are just looking at the national team and not saying anything. Twanzebi, my eyes are on you. Wan-Bissaka, my eyes are on you.
Hey,
I know.
My eyes are not on
you. I know.
Wait, but, you want the guy to play for the... Huh?
But at least is... Look, come on, you tell me. He, as bad as he is...
No.
He goes.
He cannot control the ball on a carpet. How is he going to
even know who plays right back for DR Congo right now?
No, but that's not the point.
Wan-Bissaka.
But do you know,
even, you know what? Sometimes you have to do. Sometimes you might have just to bring him there to bring viewers. That's all it is.
Hey Tony, all I know is I don't know the right back's name for Congo right now, but I know he can control a football.
Oh my God, that's why
we're about to go to the World Cup.
Carl, who are you backing, man? Your team. He's going.
Okay, with all that being said, if I can't pick my home nation, I'm going to be a bandwagon fan. The numbers don't lie. Sam, you know the star man of this team very well because he scored the best free kick I ever saw in the 95th minute.
Oh, lie, man.
Riyad Mahrez.
Got me back on that one.
Algeria for the win. Algeria. We're going back to back. We're doing
I need my revenge, man.
Back to back. That's my team.
Alicia admitted it. Jump on the bandwagon indeed, man.
I'm not picking a losing horse, bro. Let me pick a team that's actually going to win, bro.
Well, I don't think you and I should be friends then because of my team. My two players, who I believe you guys would be having a good time watching, I'm going to go down the Shea route of picking quite a young, raw talent that hasn't made his first team. Well, actually, he has made his first team appearance. He has now.
Yeah, he's got one in it.
Yeah, he has. Star of the Arab Cup, Manchester United's own Hannibal Mejbri.
Ola.
What do you need? What more do you need? With a name like Hannibal, you just know all the way to the top. Like, the parents said, this kid, no matter what he does in life, he's going to be a star. That's why we're going to call him Hannibal. Hannibal Mejbri, 18 years old. He's not even 19 yet. He will be 19 in a couple of weeks' time. I expect him to be at the forefront of Tunisia's team because he was in the Arab Cup. He played exceptionally well. I think he had two man of the matches as well in games there. So he should be right in the centre. So it would be nice to see Hannibal, centre mid, Omar Rekic, centre back, both of them make their claims at the end of the World Cup. You know, force them way into the setup of the first team. The reason why I picked him is not only because he's a baller, you're not going to miss him because his hair is crazy. He's got like Fellaini hair. So you're going to see him. It's going to be crazy. You're going to see like Sideshow Bob just spin around your midfielder and say, like, oh, who's that player? Hannibal Mejbri. Very technical on the ball as well. Great with both feet. Can dribble out of tight spots. Got a decent passing range on him as well. And the one thing I really, really enjoy about watching this guy is he has a lot of self-confidence and belief in himself. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter who he's playing against. Doesn't matter if it's against a 30-year-old established guy. Doesn't matter if it's Luka Modric. He will give his best. And he is an exceptional talent, so I'm really happy to see him and see what he can do. I believe a lot of fans will be watching anyway, because especially if they're Man United fans, a lot of fans from Manchester United are very aware of his name, so they're going to be interested to see what he can do. One thing that really grinds my gears is footballers that don't play for the motherland. So it's happy to see, obviously it's nice for France to have talents here and there. And it was nice to see them win the 2018 World Cup. It was like a collection of migrants coming together for the better cause. And it kind of shows you that immigration is actually quite powerful and can be for a better thing. But at the same time, I just want to see an African country go all the way, not only in the World Cup. everybody remembers 2010. Everybody remembers the injustice by Uruguay. And that's the closest. Listen, Suarez did what he did to win the game, and ideally he's not a villain because he's at win at all costs.
Listen,
but at the same time, when you look at it from a sportsmanship view, Ghana would cheat it out. And no,
Tony, if Dio Mercy Mbokani did that, yeah, for me at the World Cup, bro, I'll put a statue in Kinshasa for him.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not disagreeing. At the same time, like when you take the emotion out of it and you look at it from a standard point of view, Suarez did an amazing thing because he kind of showed people that he's a winner and he'll do anything at all costs to win, right? And I can appreciate that. When you look at it from a Ghana point of view or a sportsmanship point of view, because there's people out there that don't like cheating in the game, Ghana got
given a spot kick after it. You smashed it off the bar, bro. Like, you didn't have to do that.
This guy's trying to turn away our Ghanaian listeners, bro.
The ball was 100% going in.
After the ball was 100%
going in.
Listen,
nearly
12 Carell,
years later, you Carell, have to take accountability.
It's not about accountability. Carell, you would rather take a definite goal than a 50-50.
Wait, do you think Suarez is the only person on the line trying to stop it, bro? There's three players.
The ball is going in.
The point is, that is 100% goal. Would you rather take 100% goal or a 50-50 penalty? That's what the point is. And ideally, this guy's going to take... Listen, Ghanaian fans, we're sorry for Carell. We don't claim at this moment of time. All right. Ideally, what the point I was trying to make is that's the closest that I've seen an African country go in a World Cup tournament, and it was beautiful.
It was beautiful.
So for me, I just want African country to go the whole way. I want to be alive and watch the first African country to lift the World Cup, even if it's
funny.
Yeah,
I've got a question. Yeah, and it's kind of to do with the first part of your statement before I started talking about Ghana, innit? So you see how you said your biggest gripe is players not playing for the motherland, innit? And this could go around to everyone's to answer it, but like, what's your thoughts on those players that they get to like 28, 29, and they're just like, actually, I'm just going to pick the motherland because I'm not going to get no caps for my adopted country, whether it's France, England, whoever, and they go play for whatever African country they're from.
I kind of hear it because, and bear with me here, I kind of hear it because on one hand, I can't remember who it was there was a recent interview from a footballer, I can't remember who it was, but they were like, they'd rather stay with no caps than... Wait, was it not Junior Stanislas?
No, it was Troy Deeney.
No,
I think it was both of them.
Yeah, Deeney said something about Jamaica, I saw that.
I don't know.
Yeah, he said he's never been to Jamaica like that, so what's the point?
Yeah, so he never played for them, so in other words, he'd rather... wait out for the rest of his career or not get any caps at all than play for his motherland, which is a bit mad. So on the other hand, you can see it as, okay, wow, this player's kind of sucked in his pride and says, well, you know what, let me go play for them. I know other people will turn around and be like, you're looking at us as second choice, blah, 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 but the player really could have just not turned up at all, like, and just put some declining. So
yeah, but then it's like,
with respect,
it's better late than never.
Situations like Kevin Prince-Boateng in 2010, where it's like, okay, Ghana at the World Cup, it was good, you wanted to go World Cup, but then when it comes to everything else, they don't want to play. And then the World Cup comes by again, and they're like, actually, no, I want to play again. So it's every time this top player who should have been playing for like another country comes, it's like they get preferential treatment.
I personally don't like it. I think it frustrates me a lot. But then at the same time, it looks good in terms of, for example, Stephen Caulker just got called up for Sierra Leone. That would have never happened 5, 6, 7 years ago. And it's a good look on African football because it shows that, okay, for a player like Stephen Caulker, who was born and raised in England, you know, may not have necessarily had a connection with Sierra Leone, going to play for an African side at the Africa Cup, it's a good look because it's just like, okay, the younger ones who are growing up in England can go and do the same. You see what I'm saying? But then the one thing that frustrates me is like, where were you during the qualifiers? Where were you during the friendlies? It's only now you wanna sort out your allegiance and then go and play at the AFCON. You know, you only want to be there for the tournaments. That's the frustrating side of things. But when you look
it's also frustrating as well. Sorry, Sam, because Stephen Cook got a cap for England. So it's type of thing, if your career were a different way, you would never support Sierra Leone.
Yeah, but then that's the same thing with Zaha, though, isn't it? They made their debuts on the same game, the Zlatan 4-goal game, where it's like, even it's for Al-Moussam in a way, it frustrates me because at the end of the day, there's two ways to look at it, right? You've got a choice to make. You could be good enough to play for your European country, which it tends to be, or you can go and kind of build something in your African nation. Because the reason why in the end they turn around and go, wow, it was one of the best decisions that I ever made, is because if you ever see when these players go, whether it's a Nigerian player or a Congolese player and this, they go back to the country, the love they get shown, they will never get it shown in France, England, Belgium, unless they win the World Cup.
I like to touch on that because I remember, I think it was this summer, Cho went back to Ghana and the love he got, even I was shocked and I was like, rah, that's
nuts.
Like, there's no England, there's no a full Wembley stadium would never cheer for that guy like that.
Chobe and Callum Hudson-Odoi, for those that missed that. This is why, like, it's a pet peeve of mine for footballers not playing for their motherland, because, like F said, they get shown love like never before. But at the same time, I'm also open to it because A, never, it's better late than never, and B, the type of not necessarily audience, but exposure that you can bring to the national team. So, for example, like, let's say, like, Thomas Partey's different because I know Thomas Partey was playing for Ghana way before he was a household name. But say if Thomas Partey was playing for France, for example, he becomes Arsenal's best player, doesn't get a cap for France for some particular reason, and then becomes Ghana's midfielder, captains him and whatnot. His name alone would influence so many footballers to do the same.
A good example, and it's not AFCON, but it's Caribbean, obviously, Mikel Antonio, what he's done for Jamaica, bro.
Exactly.
Big example, like him alone has made a lot more people tuned into Jamaica friendly games. You get what I'm saying? A lot more now I see people on Twitter talking about the Jamaica game as it's playing and it's like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. You get what I'm saying? Like, so it definitely does raise the exposure on the country. For me, it's a pet peeve of mine because like you'd wanna, I don't know, like, it depends on how you're raised, because obviously I'm born here, but my mum and my dad are both Jamaican. I was raised in a Caribbean household with Caribbean culture, so the culture alone for me would make me choose to play for Jamaica before I play for England, because obviously, even though, like, I was raised here and whatever else, like, I still got that Caribbean necessary, like, culture, do you get what I'm saying? So when I see players, like, choose a different country, makes me wonder how was their upbringing, do you get what I'm saying, in that way of like their culture, and if they were really even connected to that culture like that. Because as well, like you guys were saying, there's players out there that don't have that connection. Like Deeney's never really been to Jamaica like that, so he wouldn't play for Jamaica, so he might not have that necessarily have that that connection with Jamaica to play for them. Whereas like you have like let's say, like, even like Leon Bailey, he's got that connection, even though he was kind of raised in Belgium, but he's got that connection, so he chose to play for Jamaica. He could have played for Belgium, apparently, he could have played for England as well. Do you get me? So
he tried his best,
like, hey, bro. The day the FA said no, that's when he went to go play for Jamaica. Yeah,
no, the footballer that I had in mind when I was explaining about the motherland thing is Tosin Adarabayo. When you have a name like that, come on, man.
Even look at flipping bro. Kareem Adeyemi, bro. I saw that name for Germany. I was like, there is no way this guy's German.
So, I mean, but the shame about Tosin as well is like him abbreviating his name, like, my name is Tosin Adarabayo, but call me Tosin. Like, no, like, brace your name. You get me?
But this is the thing, though. In this conversation, it just goes to show how far behind the African teams and the Caribbean teams are, because it shouldn't be a thing of where we should be debating this. When you hear Nigeria want you, when you hear Congo want you, when you hear Angola want you, you should be pouncing at the opportunity. You shouldn't be like, oh, let me wait a couple years. You want to wait a couple years to go and play for England? In that time, 2 AFCONs has passed. Do you know what I mean? You could have gone and played your football. But like, I was talking to a friend a couple months back, and he was basically talking about And we were talking about Saka, and I was like, I would have loved Saka to come play for Nigeria, but I understand why he picked England. Because even there was an interview with Leon Balogun with the Beautiful Game podcast, and he was talking about how, why has Nigeria not got a St. James's Park? Nigeria are training in different hotels every time they get called up across the country. We haven't got a facility where the players just go to. Mm. You see what I'm saying? But in England, they have a hotel, training facility, dining room, everything all in one place. They just stay there until they're, and then leave for the games. But I don't know one African country. I think there's one that just recently brought on. I believe it was Egypt. But that goes to show, like, you know, there's players who are playing in the Premier League and then, you know, getting all this nice treatment, all these good facilities, and then they're having to fly over to Africa and they're just getting treated like crap. You know, even with the women's team, the Nigerian women's team, they want a coach in Austria. I believe they were going to play an away game, and some guy goes on a coach, and he it was like a public one, and he's filming them saying, you guys are a disgrace. How can you play for Buhari? Them kind of things can't run. They shouldn't be exposed to that kind of behavior. Do you know what I mean? They shouldn't be exposed to people that, you would never see someone filming the whole England team telling them, how can you not be playing for Boris? All of this stuff. You don't see the players.
Because well, they're all in one facility. With, like, the one thing that I've always advocated for is, like, if these young players look at it and go, the infrastructure is not great, whatever, whatever, this is why we don't want to play for the country. There's enough young players from these nations yet to get together and go, right, look, we'll give you a year. We'll give you 2 years, right? Fix it up, or we go play for our, you know, our adopted nations or whatever it is. Like, there is those ultimatums we have to start giving where it's like, up the facilities so we can experience something similar to club level. But there's no one to, how can I put it this way? If you've got C-level facilities and C-level players, that is what it is. Mm. But sometimes you need A-star players to bring the facilities up to at least an A.
I agree.
And there's nobody like big time. I know Zaha went on the Judy podcast and was talking about how, like, terrible it is, like, Ivory Coast with some of the hotel situation and the food and the rooms, sharing rooms and stuff like that. But that's the only voice I've heard where he's saying, like, I want it to be better so the quality of football and everything else can go up with it. And we just don't have that at the moment. It's more so like people sit back quietly and then later on down the line, they go, okay, why did you never play for your country? Oh, the facilities weren't good. This wasn't good. Why were you not campaigning for it?
No,
as fans, we're asking for it. As players need to ask for it.
But at the same time, I feel like there's a job that CAF need to do, because you're not going to see it at this upcoming AFCON. They're going to make everything look perfect. The pitches are going to be great. If you go and watch Sierra Leone play in a friendly, for example, when they played Nigeria in one of the, I think it was the 2023 AFCON qualifiers, the pitch was horrendous. You've seen training pitches, parks in England, better than the grass that we saw on there. And that's not even me over-exaggerating. I'm not even laughing when I say that, because it's the honest truth. You see what I'm saying? I feel like there's a job that CAF need to do first before we can start putting the pressure on the players. Because at the end of the day, the players are there to kick ball. We shouldn't have to make them having to. I know it's always good to see players speak out and, you know, try and make a change. I love when that happens. Do you know what I mean? But I feel like you will never see the FA lacking in facility. Do you see what I'm saying? Before the players have to come out and complain about it. Everything's always patterned. So there's a job that CAF need to do across Africa first before we can start talking about, okay, you know, let's get these big boy players in. Because I was even talking to a friend and he was saying that, you know, AFCON should be as big as the World Cup. If you think back to history, players like Zidane could have played in Africa, you know, for Algeria, you know. Who else, you know, there's loads of, like, did you know what I mean? You know, Vieira could have played for, like, Senegal, all these type of players. You see what I'm doing? Top players that could have been playing for African countries, but they don't want to do it because there's just no, the facilities is going to obviously create a better atmosphere for football. But, and then that will obviously lead to, you know, teams going into the latter stages of the competition and stuff. But until them facilities change, none of these big players are coming, man.
There's also the story of Adebayor as well that I believe damaged the perception of African countries as well. I'm not sure how true it is because I don't believe it came from Adebayor himself. But I remember I read reports about Adebayor personally funding the Togo national team. So, like, out of the wages he was getting playing for Arsenal and then obviously Tottenham, he would fund travel fund training kits and whatnot. Mm. Togo national team. And then when he quit the national team for Togo, because obviously I think there was the whole shooting incident as well. He quit after that, obviously, for his own health and safety. Mm. Where have Togo been?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So it's kind of like, it's when that comes into fruition, you're like, well, this doesn't happen with any European nation, even the small ones like San Marino and Faroe Islands. It's like, why is it only Africa having to deal with situations like this? It's
crazy, because like, I was going to say, like, even like non, like, for example, non-footballing nations, like your, maybe even China's and USA's, they're going to surpass the African team soon if we don't up the levels. Because remember, with the amount of like African people that move out into Europe, America, and these countries, they're getting our diaspora too. And their facilities, like, you see what America's trying to do, and China, like, they're putting all these infrastructures in place. If we don't do that, then we're going to be the ones bouncing out in group stages of World Cups rather than last 16s and little quarterfinals that we've had before. So we're running a slippery slope. And I hope this AFCON, with all this controversy and stuff that's going on, we can really see the quality of football that is there. And like the fact that it's on Sky Sports, bro, like, we grew up watching on Eurosport. That coverage was dead. It was that one commentator. My man, just one commentator, not even dual commentators until the final. Like, so this is a good first step. Like, Sky Sports will force people to watch it by virtue of it just being on. And like, hopefully for years to come, it can elevate the perception of the tournament that we've got at the moment.
I'm happy as well, because like we mentioned as well, there's a young group of talent coming through that can really, really, really hit the stars. We've noticed as well that African countries are now trying to recruit players from a younger age to switch over. Mm-hmm. And especially with some of the names that we've heard today in this podcast, Mohamed Kudus, Kamal Dean Sulemana, Hannibal Mejri, the fact that Tunisia managed to convince Hannibal Mejri to switch at 18 despite the massive career that he has in front of him. Hopefully this is a sign of change. And that then goes back to my second player. I never got around to saying my second player. I had a few choices for this, if I'm honest with you. My initial choice was going to be Bamba Dieng, that plays for Marseille. He's a left winger, or can also plays on the right hand side. Recently broke into the Marseille first team. And you know what? He's actually held his own. You know, his competition there is Cengiz Under. They used to play for Leicester and Roma and stuff, as well as Conrad De La Fuente and other players at that, replacing Tovin. And he's done all right. I think he's got a couple of goals. Really forced his way into this national team. But I decided to go with someone of a bigger name and a bigger status. He is...
Is it Sadio Mane?
No. Come on. No, he is Diadi Samaseku's centre midfield partner. And that's Amadou Haidara. Leipzig midfielder. Naby Keita's replacement at Leipzig as well. Lazy analysis to say he's similar to Naby Keita. I feel like he's a bit more dynamic. Haidara is almost like a utility man in terms of how he plays. He can play at right back, believe it or not. He can play at right mid, left mid, centre mid as well. Very explosive, box-to-box midfielder. Again, that's a dribble his way out of trouble. A decent pass. I'd say the only problem he would have is concentration. Sometimes he switches off. Maybe when he gets tired, he's like, oh, can't do this anymore, and he lets like a man run through, or sometimes he gets beaten too quickly in transitions, and that can be a handicap. But he's still young. I believe he's 23 and he's got a fantastic ceiling ahead of him. I'm excited to see his midfield partnership. Well, hopefully, I hope to God Mali play a midfield three with Kamara, Diadi Samaseku and Haidara, so then Haidara can really have the freedom to attack and show his attacking ability with Samaseku and Kamara sitting off behind him. But he is someone that, again, he hasn't got long left at Leipzig. I think he's got a big move ahead of him. Whether that's this year or next year is yet to be seen, but he's definitely someone to keep an eye out for. That being said, my team that's going to go the whole way, just in spite of Carell, is Morocco. I think it's Morocco's turn this year. How far would that be for Algeria to watch their neighbours snatch it off them?
It's not going to happen, so it's fine. It's all good.
It's definitely not happening.
I'm not going to be Algerian.
Listen, I'll put my money on Morocco. Why?
Hey, my Habib. You know what he fought? He fought because they left Ziyech at home, that they're bad boys, they can do without
him. Oh, wow.
That's pride. Wow. That's pride.
No. I'm saying this because of the names they've got, man. I believe, listen, I like their squad, right? You get me? They've got Hakimi in there. They've got Sofyan Alakouchi in there. They've got Sofyan Boufal. He finally found his feet again after a turbulent time at Southampton. They've got your boy, Ilyas Chair in there, Karel, come on.
Apparently he's not going to play minutes, so I couldn't have picked him. But you know, Ilyas, I was there for you, bro. I was going to pick you, but people laughed me out the building.
They've got Sofyan Amrabat in midfield as well. Come on, they've got Agird from Rennes. They've got a decent squad. Yusuf and Nasiri up front as well. So they've got a decent squad. They can make it happen. And why not? As well with Bounou, who's playing week in, week out at Sevilla. Like, he's a UEFA Cup winner. So this guy's there, man. It's a good squad that can come together and maybe do some damage.
What I want to see, though, yeah, you see everyone's picked their teams. Yeah. I need everyone to tweet during the tournament like they're really fans of that team.
Yeah, why not? That could be a personal challenge for us all.
I'm gonna write down, like, you see, I'm gonna put down all of, like, who everyone's picked, so Sam, you're involved, and I'm just every result I'm just gonna post about in it and just let you guys know when your teams come up the tournament and eventually when my team wins in it.
You know what's funny as well, because I know for a fact Karel will forget about it.
I might.
But for me, listen, hey, I'm gonna put my head out on the line and say, Monday, next week, Monday, is Morocco versus Ghana. That'll be a fantastic game to watch. And that'll be a good game for Morocco to state their intent and see how, you know, whether or not they're serious in this thing. It could be another Turkey from the Euros. Everyone thought Turkey would do all right. But at the same time, I want to put my neck on the line and say Morocco's assembled squad is one of the strongest, I believe, in Africa.
I'm actually really excited to see Boufal as well. I can't lie to you. He's done really well since
he's got me talking about Boufal for 6 weeks, you know. He's been waiting for him. Wait, Sam, I've got a question. No, yeah. Seems like out of us, I'd say you're the most well-rounded in terms of your expertise on African football, in terms of, like, internationally as well. For the listeners, is there a player or a couple of players you can think of that have, like, big names that people might rate, but they don't quite show up on that stage in terms of internationally? And vice versa as well, someone that doesn't perform at club level and does internationally.
That's a very, very good question. I'm trying to think. It's difficult because usually the top guys do perform. I think I'm kind of going to reverse your question because it's more to do with players that perform at club level and don't perform internationally.
Okay.
Salah is one of them players. Salah does not necessarily impress all the time for Egypt. 2018 World Cup, I think he got one goal, I believe, and it was only a penalty. He doesn't turn up. 2019 was also the same. He kind of went under the radar.
Egypt, he was in our group. And
yeah, Egypt went well out. Egypt went out at the group as well. Mm-hmm. So my eyes are on him because obviously he's had a 6 season so far. I don't know if he's going to be able to carry Egypt. He's one guy that just goes into the shadows.
They got Onene, man. It's calm.
No, but real talk here. You see why this is mad as well, right? So it's Salah, who's arguably the best player in the world at the moment, according to a lot of people's metrics. Do I agree? Probably not, but it is what it is. But he doesn't perform at AFCON. And this is where we talk about the scope and the size of the tournament.
Mm.
If he played for Egypt the way, like, people think Messi plays for Argentina, where he doesn't show up, but he shows up at club level, that could affect his stock. But because people are not seeing it, I hope people watch it now that it's on Sky Sports and say,
yeah,
hey,
I really want him to perform this year, because this is now going to be, because if he performs at the AFCON and maybe Egypt reach semis or final or even win the whole trophy, you know, this is the conversation about him winning Ballon d'Or is going to be there now.
Does
that international, do you know what I mean?
Does AFCON have an effect on it?
How much clout? Because Mahrez won, I think Mahrez in 2019 won the quadruple, didn't he? And he won the AFCON.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
it's just not respected. But
would you guys think? This is a good conversation. What do you guys think needs to be done, or what needs to happen for AFCON to have that clout? So for a player like Salah, if he wins it, that pushes him to win a ballot. Because we saw with Messi, cool, he had a okay season. What did he win? Copa del Rey. But winning that trophy with Argentina, yes, it was the first trophy they won ever. Under Messi anyway, with Messi. But what needs to be done for AFCON to like get to that level where it's like, it's got the huge coverage now, but like what else?
I think Sam's already spoken it about the facilities and stuff.
That's part of it. There's still obviously a lot more. I think one of the main reasons is there's too much comparison from fans. Like, we're always trying to compare it to the Euros although I do, you know, hope and pray that one day we do get to that level. You know, there's just too much comparison. That's part of the reason why a lot of people just can't sit down and enjoy women's football, because they just try to compare it. Oh, the best player in women's football, let's see how good he is compared to the man. In all other sports, you don't see that. You know, UFC, you know, tennis, you don't see everyone trying to compare the men and the women. You know, it's only in football we do that. But I think that's part of the reason. Like, we're always trying to look, oh, let's try and pick out all the bad stuff that's going to happen at the AFCON, and then we'll tweet about that, when there's so much good things that are happening as well. Do you know what I mean? And that's part of us as fans as well, you know, us people that actually come from the continent, it's part of us. I know we like to make jokes. There's funny stuff that happens at the AFCON, do you know what I mean? But it's a part of us to really raise that profile and actually, you know, talk about it on socials and talk about the players in different ways as well. We're not just fast and strong, do you know what I mean? There's skillful players. There's players with agility. There's players that can pass the ball well. Do you know what I mean? I think Yaya Toure is one of the players that, you know, kind of broke that stereotype over the years. You know, there's different players that can come out of Africa. And it's just about putting that out there a bit more, man, and just letting people know. That's why I'm just so happy it's on Sky Sports, because I feel like if they cover it well, you know, have, a panel on, you know, for post-match and pre-match and whatever, you know, have proper commentators in the booth, it's going to really big it up, man.
Hey, it can't be worse than the BBC coverage of the Copa America, because that was terrible. You know what it is as well, though? Like, if you think about it,
the commentator was half asleep in the
trust me.
Yeah.
The only thing we need now, yeah, is like you said, coverage, and just dress it up and make it look nice, because you can't deny that the AFCON doesn't have name value. Yes, there are teams with players that you've never heard of. Yes, teams like Comoros and Mauritania are there. We don't know anything about them. But it's the same at the World Cup. Honduras or Panama or even Copa America. Well, I don't know every. Some teams are the 16 teams. I don't know even one player. But that's the whole point of a tournament. But use the name value and dress it up. You've got arguably the best player in the world. You've got guys who play in the top like 2-3 teams in England. You've got Mahrez, Salah, Mane, all playing for 3 different teams. That's already 3 teams you can promote and make them look like, you know, they're top clubs. Yeah. I mean, top countries to fear and to look out for. And they just never do that. Back in the day, we had Drogba, Eto'o, 2 of the most prominent strikers in the world. There was never any Judd.
I think we're talking about advertising as well. We see the Olympics were always like well advertised and be like, yeah, it's time for the Olympics.
Sky Sports, they're not even showing much. They're like, I haven't seen them talk about people not going. You know, clubs holding players back.
That's something that we really miss as well, is endorsements. Like you said, you know, Eto'o and Drogba was generally like a 15-year battle in the AFCON in terms of who's the best African striker, Drogba or Eto'o. And now we can really do the same thing. Like, we can turn Salah and Mane against each other and have another rivalry, but that's not a thing. We can have a massive endorsement. As you can see in the World Cup, the face of the World Cup is Pelé. You get me? Everybody knows who Pelé is. Maradona, before he passed away, everybody knew who he was. It was like a Pelé versus Maradona thing. Who's the best of all the best? And ideally, when Messi retires, it'll be Messi versus Ronaldo in terms of who's the best of the best with the World Cup, right? Especially if one of them, I don't know if it's going to happen because neither of them have won it, but especially if somehow both of them win it before they retire. What AFCON doesn't have is the endorsement. They need someone who's a recognisable face that can come in every single 2 years and be like, this is the AFCON, and get you hyped for it. Like you said, there's no media presence. There's no build-up or hype. And there's no tournament rivalry. If you've got 2 footballers that'd be like, best African footballer of all time, is it Salah or is it Mane? And then you can use that as a media tip to try and get people hyped up for the tournament. And unfortunately, AFCON doesn't have it.
It's a good point.
It comes down to the fact of like, this is what I like to compare AFCON to the Copa America, in it, because Copa America is another one where like, it's a very messy tournament when you look at it in terms of like, unless it's held in like Brazil, for example, like are the facilities always going to be the best? No. Are the pitches always going to be the best? No. Is the quality of football on the pitch even always going to be the best? No. But it's just easy because you can just go, well, Neymar's there, Messi's there, watch the games.
Mm.
Well, who's sitting and watching Paraguay versus Uruguay or whoever at the moment? Not really. If you love football, you're going to see those games. But like Tony's saying, it's like the big games, when the big teams come in, you need to promote that. So then, even if that's someone's first glimpse, if it's like a Nigeria versus Algeria, like the semi-final in 2019 was a really good game, like gripping game. But it's like, if a tree falls in the middle of the forest and no one's around to hear it, did it make a noise? And that's what it feels like every single time. Because it's like, no one's made you feel like, you have to watch this, you have to watch. There's boxing matches that I probably don't even care about, but because everyone says, you're going to watch the fight, you're going to watch the fight, you're going to watch
I'll
be up at 4 a.m. watching it, just out of curiosity.
I think it's down to the fans and players as well, like Tony mentioned, because let's say, I'm thinking of an example, let's say when City got to the semi-final of the Champions League last year, Foden, obviously, he sacked his whole PR team, whatever, but he put out a tweet calling out Mbappe, basically. And the numbers that got that tweet got was mad.
And that's amazing. I wish he didn't sack his PR team because that would have become a genuine rivalry just because fans would want it to be.
And it's like how even on a day-to-day basis, we see little kids saying, yeah, the future's Haaland versus Mbappe, Haaland versus Mbappe. If one of them, like just let's say Salah, Mane and Salah were just to tweet, oh yeah, see you at AFCON like, or something like that. That would be nuts. Like, bro, the following Salah has is incredible. Like, the amount of sponsors he has, like Coca-Cola, like, all of these different brands. I think there's some responsibility we can put on the players on this as well and be like, okay, yeah, like, you guys are so eager to go off with your country there. Like, show it. Like, show it on social media. Like, let us know about it.
It's part they're of, eager like, to go, but I feel like at the same... It's not, like, a shame at the same time, but they're always made to feel, like, very timid for having to leave in the middle of January to go play for their country. Now, I feel like your country should be the only, not only, but it should be the main source of like, I play football for the love of the game sort of thing, because that's your country, innit? Your club, you can change it every year and get paid more and more every year, but your country, that's your one sort, that's your heart, innit? Yeah. So the fact that even when they do interviews and it's always like, oh, I understand it's going to make my team, like, it's going to put us in the position, but you know, I kind of have to go and do this because it's my country, innit? If no one really comes out and goes, listen, I don't even know why you're asking me this question. I'm going to Africa Cup of Nations. I'm trying to bring a trophy home for my country. That's it. That's that. That's what leaves it open for debate. Because when the players ask it elsewhere, they move so 50-50 about it that it's like, should you even really be going then? They should even be saying, like, someone like Sar, I know they've let him go in the end, and they were talking about his injury. I don't care. One leg, but match fit to play.
Uproar about that as well.
Pardon?
I feel like there could have been so much more of an uproar about that as well. Like, if he was to come out, and with him, it's maybe a bit different because, Watford put out a statement saying that he is doing rehabilitation, whatever, and they sent over, they invited over representatives from the squad to come and look at him, whatever. But let's say in the Manuel Dennis situation, if Dennis speaks out now, that's all the media are going to have to talk about. And it's going to be a big shame to Watford, which it kind of already is, but I feel like there could be more pressure put on them. And it's like, okay, wait, what do you mean you're not letting a player go? Like,
it's never seen that though, because even though the Dennis uproar was there, it was about 20 minutes. And ideally, it actually put more shame to the AFCON than it did to Watford. Because obviously fans of Nigeria that want to see Dennis there would be like, oh, shame for Watford. Why they're not letting Dennis play for his country? Watford fans would turn around and be like, yeah, but we need him to stay up in the Premier League. All of a sudden, the attention switches. It's not Watford being the criminals and not letting Emmanuel Dennis go up. But it then becomes of AFCON is disturbing Dennis from a Premier League campaign.
But so bro, it's three games. It's not like it's like a mad amount of games.
It's not three games, mate. We're going to the final.
I like that.
You know what I mean, though? Like, it's not like a madness. It's a month of football, bro. That, like, bro, they're going to stop the Premier League next season, midway through the season in the winter. Because
it's mad. It's actually mad. And I love that you mentioned it because we were meant to mention that at the start where it's like, cool, everyone's all talking about, like you said, we're taking a break for the World Cup, which is happening in winter. Now AFCON, obviously, because of the whole format change, whatever, they're moving it to the summer after this year's competition. I mean, it's like I said earlier when we were talking, I think it was yesterday, I generally think it's very possible for the way every other European league has a winter break. A winter break could also be put in place where it's like, cool, the Premier League players also go on a break. And during that break, the players, the African players will go to go play at a Cup of Nations. They come back, they don't miss any games. It's very possible. But they just don't
ever make those provisions for a European... Because look at this, like, Chelsea are going to go to the Club World Cup in a couple of weeks, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not seen as a distraction. That's seen as like, yeah, go win, be the best team in the world or whatever the hell that means. Because you're beating teams from different continents, no disrespect to them that aren't even on your level. But a guy wants to go and play for his country and bring some national pride, the same one that everyone's singing is coming home all summer. Do you not think people in Africa are doing that for their players?
Exactly, yeah. Like,
and I just think it's just a...
I kind of like the uproar, though, because it shows how much impact African players are actually having at these clubs. There's a numerous number of clubs. There's loads of clubs that are going to negatively be impacted by their players leaving. You see what I'm saying? Kone going away from Burnley is a massive.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sean Dash is sat in his office like, I knew there was the reason I didn't sign these kind of guys.
So it's time that, you know, all, like I was even saying this because I know that I think BT were looking into basically taking the AFCON before Sky Sports took it.
Hey.
And I remember saying to someone, you know, there's going to be so many eyes on the AFCON now because fans are going to want to see their players doing their thing. They're going to see how well they're performing. Is anyone going to get injured? Is anyone, you know, performing for country and not performing for club? So this is the time now, you know, we should look at the positives from this uproar and be like, the players need to perform now and put on a show.
Wait, is this the first time, like, in terms of the AFCON, that, like, most of the teams are really directly affected in the league.
From what I remember, from what I can remember over the years, this is the first time like is people have complained so much about it because it's always been in Jan. Aside from 2019, we've known the AFCON to be in Jan. Honestly, in all my years of football, I've never complained about AFCON being in Jan.
Of course, and all publicity is good publicity, isn't it? So even though causing an uproar, it makes people talk about the competition and therefore it makes people acknowledge there's a competition there. And obviously that's what we want. We want people to start noticing that there's more to the football than just Europe.
I do think like the flip side of it is I do feel like some teams, maybe like even a Burnley, for example, might actually be proud of their player going to the AFCON in terms of like, because their team doesn't get that exposure of having international players in their team that, you know, could impact a tournament. So, I look forward to it, man. I can't wait. Bring on Sunday, man. The repeat. Bring
on Sunday, indeed. Sunday's AFCON starts as well with the host nation Cameroon taking on Burkina Faso, who were finalists in 2013, weren't they? They unlikely finalists, but John Petropia's team went all the way and lost to Nigeria, wasn't it? So let's see if there's a repeat of that this year. Cameroon take on Burkina Faso on Sunday the 9th at 4 o'clock GMT. So that'll be a great game to watch. Guys, it's been fantastic, honestly. Sam, thank you for joining us today. Please plug your socials once again for people listening.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. So just follow at Jabulani XI. That's JABULNI. XI on Twitter and Instagram. Yeah, so we'll be covering the tournament throughout for the whole month. So yeah, follow us. We're going to be doing quite a lot of Twitter spaces as well. So you guys jump in. I'll give you the chance to give your opinion on the games and stuff. So yeah, looking forward to it, man.
I'm in there and forgive me because I will slander a lot of nation teams.
Go ahead, man.
It's been an absolutely emotional one. We are very excited for this year's AFCON. We always are excited. It's a chance for Africa to actually stand up and show the world what we're about. Some key sentences that we heard today, you know, we are more than just fast and strong. It's a chance for us to show the world what we're about, and there's more to football than just Europe. So please tune in on Sunday. Please tune into as many games as you can, and let us know any footballers that stand out for yourself. Let us know any nations that stand up for yourself, as well as let us know who you think is going to go all the way. If you disagree with us, if you do agree with us, just comment in the replies. We'll get back to you and we'll start a discussion.
I don't know how this fits into the episode or if it even makes sense, but always remember, progression in football is not linear.
Progression in football is not linear, which also means if someone necessarily... Nash, I'm not going to go into all of that, but progression in football is not linear.
Maybe you find out about Salah during this tournament. He's good for Liverpool, doesn't mean you're going to be good for Egypt, innit? I'm just saying.
Before we go as well, do you remember 2015 AFCON, Ramadan Sobhi? You remember that? His name?
Yeah, was? Yeah.
He was seen like the Maradona of Egypt. And then, that's why football's not linear. Progression in football, sorry, is not linear.
Hey, never in my life did I think Congo would lose to Madagascar, but here we are anyway, so.
We didn't need that. Why did you give people...
Why are we ending on a bad note? What are you
trauma, doing? Trauma.
The best thing to come out of Congo football-wise is the goalkeeper. The...
No, we're going to end it right there. So again, please.
Yannick Bolasie, never come into Congo again. You're playing like a crazy warp.
Yannick, if you're listening, we'll be deadly serious. Do not dare. All right. We'll see you guys next time. Speak soon. Bye.